interrupt regular programming to bring you a message from Her Majesty's government. Please stand by and await further information. We interrupt regular programming to bring you a message from Her Majesty's government. Please stand by and await further information.
This is the perfect time to panic!
Panic on the streets of London. Panic on the streets of Birmingham. I wonder to myself, could life ever be sane again? The lead side streets that just slip down. I wonder to myself, hopes may rise in the grass near, but honey pie, you're not safe here. So you run down to the safety of the town.
It's an Arsenal Thing podcast with your hosts, Tom, Silent Dave, Isaiah, and Jay. Fun, football, and conversation.
Burn down the disco. Hang the best of DJ. Because the music that they constantly play, it says nothing to me about my life.
Hello and welcome to It's an Apocalypse podcast. I'm your host, Professor Quatermass, and I'm in the company of Quarantine Dave. They've been dropping like Wuhan laboratory assistants in the Premiership as match after match is called off. COVID-19 is currently as welcome in football as Prince Andrew at a teenage prom. However, Dean Smith was delirious, safe in the knowledge he could avoid defeat and keep his job for another week. It's now so bizarre that Herman Klopp, the dental mannequin, is petitioning the FA about the absence of regular football. Elsewhere, Messrs Hoddle and Mills, the princes of punditry, were upset by the postponement of the Carabao Cup semi-final between Arsenal and Liverpool. Glenn, the former Spurs man and devout Christian, who is now referred to as Glenn Goddall, said, "I think if the rules are there and you haven't got the players to put out, then I think it's different. But I'm sure behind the scenes they'll be asked who is fit, who has got COVID, who is injured. So I think the game's got to go ahead." Danny Mills agreed and questioned why Klopp couldn't have been forced to play his under-23 players, just as he did in a 2019-20 season when he was forced to play a League Cup tie before his side went to the Club World Cup. You may also recall Leighton Orient having to forfeit their FA Cup clash with Tottenham last season due to an outbreak, while Aston Villa played a team of under-18 players for the tie with Liverpool in the same month. So that was that. But when we started researching this episode, the Premier League clubs were told by the FA they must field a team for the FA Cup third round ties despite the COVID chaos, and that could potentially see the top teams relying on academy players. It's another example of the FA's ineptitude and incompetence by making rules for one particular club or another in certain competitions with no obvious threads of consistency. This comes at a time where the standards of refereeing are at an all-time low, and VAR continues to raise questions over its use and interpretation of the rules. I'll be interested to see what Jay says about this one.
It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Fun, football, and conversation.
On the menu tonight, Isaiah looks high and low for some entertainment in the third round clash against Nottingham Forest at the City Ground. Good luck with that. And delivers all his key points and takeaways on American Arsenology. Jay joins me in the gun room to examine a number of issues from the game. We'll be tearing the FA a new one as they continue to be the clowns of world football. We ask, why was the Forest performance so bad? And we also look forward to the Carabao Cup first leg match again. Episode 39 is entitled The Irate Spaniard and the Angry Glove. A reminder of the only exciting moment in the entire 90 minutes of an Arsenal performance so bad that Boris Johnson threatened to close North London permanently and Rob Holdini Holding's wig walked off in disgust 10 minutes from time. At one point, Mikel Arteta picked up Cedric Suarez by the ankle and waved him in his nice pristine white kit around like a flag to signal the side's surrender and utter capitulation. Look, we've been here before to the well of dejection on the banks of devastation. We know what the water tastes like. We refused to drink it last time, but they made us drink it anyway. And now they expect us to drink from the well again. But I say no, sir. I'm not drinking from the well. In Arsenal news, William Big Bill Saliba has been named in League One's Team of the Season. Ainsley Maitland-Niles has completed his move to Roma. We wish him well. Crystal Palace boss Patrick Vieira has laughed off suggestions that he was interested in Eddie Nketiah and Aaron Ramsey, despite a mischievous twinkle in his eye. Did you see that, Dave? It was the right one. Very telling, in my opinion. Atletico Madrid are interested in signing Arsenal defender Cedric Suarez on a loan. Mikel Arteta has ruled out re-signing Jack Wilshere by saying, "I was very clear with the situation with Jack and the role he was going to have around here, and we continue the same way." I must admit, that made me a bit sad. Anyway, onwards and upwards. Idris Elba and Ian Wright have joined Arsenal Adidas initiative No More Red. It's an initiative to tackle teenage knife crime, which is a brilliant idea. And those shirts look epic. They're not for sale at the moment, but we're hoping the club changes its mind because it'll raise a lot of money, a lot of awareness. That's the whole point, isn't it? And finally, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has contracted this week's version of COVID, which is probably now named after a little-known Greek philosopher or is comprised of the leftover letters of a game of Scrabble. It never rains, but it pours for the Gabon striker, who is rumoured to be on the verge of a move out of the Emirates. Dave's nodding furiously. He wants him out. He's ruthless, that Dave. In the meantime, shall we go over to Mr. Aubameyang's luxurious hospital suite to listen to a conversation between his nurse and his doctor?
Doctor, what are we going to do about Mr. Aubameyang?
There's nothing we can do, nurse. The man's an asshole.
It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Fun, football, and conversation.
Just to let you know, we at the podcast are fully sanitized. We claim to be the most hygienic podcast in the history of sanitizedism. The cups are plastic and so is the food. There's a 50-foot perimeter around the recording area and Dave's nan, Lily, is lurking on the rooftop and has been ordered to shoot on sight. Hey Dave, that second postman nearly made the front door. As they say in the STD clinic, you can't be too careful. Wise words at a late hour. What a week! Spurs doing a Spursy against Chelsea at the bridge, ringing yicks, United losing to Wolves. Which begs the question,
are you Wally in disguise? Are you Wally in disguise?
Newcastle, the human rights abusers, are splashing the blood money in the transfer window, and for £12 million they picked up the 31-year-old ex-Tottenham reject, Kieran Trippier. Well played. Elsewhere, Rafa Benitez is holding a fire sale to raise cash due to the FFP rules, and Arsenal are bracing themselves for bids on several overpriced fringe players. So on to the FA Cup, our cup, and in our path to win number 15, Nottingham Forest. Let's roll out the facts. Nottingham was originally called Snottingham after being ruled by a Saxon chief called Snot, and the name translates to the homestead of Snot's people. Lovely. Predictably, we have to mention Robin in the Hood, who, if he were alive today, would be drinking cider outside a row of nearby shops, robbing passers-by. But then he'd be known as Robin in the Hoodie. Hey, that works on two levels.
Never mind that. Who was Robin Hood?
Good question.
I know.
Riding through the glen, Robin Hood with his band of men, feared by the bad, loved by the good, Robin Hood. Robin Hood, Robin Hood.
Well, it turns out he wasn't just one person. He was five. There was Robin of Locksley in 1245. There was Robin Hood of York in 1226. There is also a Robin Hood of Wakefield dated in the 14th century. And Roger Godbeard, who was a supporter of Simon de Montfort in 1260. But he was never proven to be the outlaw himself.
That's not five.
Be quiet. And there was another one. Quirky facts about Nottingham. The first VCR was invented by the Nottingham Electronic Valve Company and was called the Telcan, which is a sort of combination of television in a can. It cost £60 and could record for just 20 minutes in black and white. How did that catch on? Did you also know that HP Source is a Nottingham discovery? Oh, yes. You may argue amongst yourselves round the old breakfast table whether it's red or brown sauce on your bacon sandwich, but that argument might not exist if it wasn't for the shopkeeper, Frederick Gibson Garton, who came up with the recipe for the famous sauce in his grocery shop in New Basford. Last but not least, the UK's first ever radio phone-in took place on the 4th of February in 1968 on Radio Nottingham. It's believed that the subject in question was pest control. How absolutely riveting. What about famous sons and daughters of the area? Try Torville and Dean, Olympic champion freestyle skaters and romantically entwined lifeguards. Wake up, Dave. What's that about? That's better. Richard Bacon, TV radio presenter and personality. I don't really know why they put that bit in. Named after the slightly salty breakfast meat in the traditional English fry-up. If not that, if that's not your thing, what about YT and Bugsy? Rachel Young T. Tucker and Doyen Bugsy Julius went on to release breakout singles Glistening, No Mickey Mouse Ting, 4x4 and Underground Smash, Green Light. They're all on my playlist, obviously. Rebecca Adlington, the lovely double Olympic swimming champion and recipient of the OBE. And finally, the Dark Lord, Bruce Dickinson, the lead singer of Iron Maiden and part-time pineapple sizer. That should be a real job.
Our future stars live yards from this stadium.
They look to this place, as we all do, for inspiration.
Nice, good, 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 good touch. One and two touch. Lift your shoulders, boy.
It's getting harder to see, though.
Go back, go back.
Take him, take him, take him.
They're looking elsewhere. They're looking over their shoulder. It's blades. It's beef. It's madness. These kids are killing their future.
It ain't about that noise.
For God's sake, man!
So how do we change this?
Yes. Options, options, concrete angles, angles.
Everyone needs inspiration. This game we love. Okay. It can change our lives.
We've got the colours they love. Let's use them. No more red.
No more red.
No more red.
Every goal, every disappointment, every good decision and every bad decision. From the first whistle to the final whistle.
Nottingham Forest were founded in 1865 and are one of the oldest professional football clubs in the English Football League. They might be down on their luck these days, but they were a force to be reckoned with under the legendary Brian Clough in the 1970s as winners of the Football League and also the European Cup 78-79, 79-80 and the UEFA Super Cup in 1979. What a team they were back in the day, and it was all down to Brian Clough. For the younger fans listening who are in awe of all these new managers being blunt and courting controversy, it's all been done before and by Brian Clough. All these things you hear about as if they've just been invented since the existence of the Premier League. Psychology, Brian Clough virtually invented it in football. He was a master of mind games. He had a tactical brilliance, a master motivator, inspirational father figure and football personality. He did it all. Still, without question, one of the best managers this country has ever produced.
It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Fun, football and conversation.
From the land that gave you popcorn, drive-ins, Johnny Mathis, and the legitimate right to shoot your neighbor for parking outside your house, direct from the U.S. of A., it's a potpourri of foosball analysis and stuff. It's American Arsenology.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to American Arsenology, brought to you by Bad Bunny. Destroying island territories, one mega concert at a time. I'm your host, Bariqua Johnson, and now, tonight's top stories. Welcome back, me gunners and me gunnerettes. Arsenal have been dumped from the FA Cup 1-0 by Nottingham Forest. It was an interesting match with all sorts of bizarre storylines. So let's get right into it. The opening storyboard of this one featured a sullen-eyed Mikel Arteta returning to the touchline after his second bout with COVID-19. And he squared off against the Welsh Tim Curry. Yes, it was Steve Cooper and his Nottingham Forest as the Spaniard and the Welshman did battle at the City Ground. It was a fascinating encounter with all sorts of combobulations and gyrations. So let's dive a little deeper. The rundown on the starting 11 featured a theme of rotation, and youthfulness. As there was a return for cup keeper Bern Leno in goal. Hey Leno, how are you, my friend? And in front of the German, it was Rob the Rug, Rob Holdini Holding, partnered with Benjamin Blanco White. It was a Portuguese set of fullbacks with Cedric Rickmarinus Soares on the right and Nuno Tavares on the left. And folks, in front of them was a double pivot of Albert Zambilokonga and Charlie Patino. Oh man, it was nice to see Patino and Lokonga. Lokonga and Patino. What a future, what a future. And in front of the double pivot, a front four featuring experience, class, and fantastic phenomenal ability. It was Gabriel Martinelli on the left, Martin Udegaard through the middle, and Bukayo Little Chili Saka on the right. Up top, there was a big opportunity, a big carrot given to Eddie Nketiah. Yes, folks, it was a huge opportunity for the English striker. And sadly, folks, He fell flat on his face.
Hey, okay, last week nothing went right. I bought a waterbed. There were two Cuban guys swimming in it looking for Florida.
The 10 minutes of this one featured Arsenal largely in domination, as they were adjusting to the away crowd who was raucous and loud on the day. It was a free kick from Odegaard and a few other passes from the Norwegian. But the opening salvo, those 10 minutes, it was largely eventless. However, one Jed Spence looked like he was out to prove himself, folks, and he would have a big day. And then, in the 11th minute, a bizarre flashpoint from this game. As the loose cannon Maserati, Nuno Tavares, would fire a shot on goal. But it was his own goal. He shot at Bern Leno in a bizarre back pass. Leno was frightened. He was startled and said, "What the fuck?"
My English is not perfect, but I have to tell you, your beer is like swill to us. Do I have that right? I'm saying that only a swine would drink this beer.
Yeah. More casual, comfortable play from Arsenal as the game progressed. In the 19th minute, there was a chance for Martinelli to go on one of his rampaging 1v1 runs. But he dribbled the ball out of bounds and it came to nothing. And on the day, it was Jed Spence who would display his English 1v1 moves. And folks, going into this one, we would not have predicted that Jed Spence on the right and fucking Gingerbread Coleback on the left would pocket Gabriel Martinelli and Bukayo Saka on the day. This was not part of the script. However, credit to both the Ginger and the Spence. Eddie Nketiah was trying to make things happen, but I don't know what was in his boots on the day, folks. Or in his head, but he was well off the mark. He was poor. So much was at stake. It was a massive opportunity for this young man. And we have been singing his praises as of late. Look, Nketiah has looked sharp. He has looked fit. He has looked fresh. And he has looked lively. And more likely to produce end product in the box than many of Arsenal's strikers. However, against Forest, at the City Ground, he was piss fucking poor.
Things were going good, weren't they?
That's exactly why I had to blow it up. I don't know what organ or bone people have that makes them act right, but I was born without it. I'm no good.
And folks, things did not get better for Arsenal as the match progressed. From the 30th minute to the 45th. Arsenal, yes, they were in possession. They had the lion's share of the ball, but they never looked threatening, folks. And they could not produce one single solitary shot on target. Eddie Nketiah was flailing around, writhing, sliding, but not as effectively as Alexander Lacazette, it must be said. Yes, perhaps, Arteta did wait a bit long to bring on Lacazette. And Nketiah was floundering, and there was no goal threat coming from Arsenal, nothing of significance. Rob Holding would take a fucking hilarious, wild, fucking awful, terrible, fucking terrible half volley with the outside of his boot that would go out for a throw. The rug cracks me up. I love the rug. The first half came to its conclusion, and Arsenal were apathetic and uninterested. The energy was low from the manager, from the players, and from the whitest of white kits.
I told you about strawberry fields. You know the place where nothing is real. Well, here's another place you can go.
And as always, there were two big whopping takeaways from the first half. Number one. Against Nottingham Forest, Mikel Arteta fielded a squad with an average age of 23 years young. In many ways, we were gazing into the future, as 22-year-old Sambi Lokonga played the six, and an 18-year-old Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Charlie Patino, played the eight. And then, Mr. Old Man himself, the 23-year-old Martin Odegaard, pulling the strings as our number 10. And while this young gun project under Mikel Arteta is clearly moving in the right direction, in an FA Cup away match, anything can happen. And on Sunday, it was clear that we missed our senior leadership. Folks, as much as you don't want to hear it, folks, we missed Granit Xhaka. We missed his progressive passing. We missed his ball retention. And we missed him standing up and protecting Bukayo Saka. If Granit Xhaka was on the pitch, he would have slapped the gingerbread man Jack Colback silly. Number two. Nuno Tavares. He was given the hook after just 35 minutes of football. 35 minutes. Listen. When a manager makes a move like this, it indeed puts a public spotlight of shame on a footballer. It is a harsh, bright light, and it is hard to take at any age, but even more so for a young player. It is ever so hard. And given Mikel Arteta did back Nuno Tavares after his performance against Liverpool, it was a surprise to see him so irate with Tavares in this one. Let me say this. While Nuno Tavares did give away possession 9 times in just 35 minutes of play, here at American Arsenology, we would play Tavares at right back over Cedric Rick Moranis Suarez any day of the damn week. We must now keep an eye on how Mikel rebuilds trust with the promising young Portuguese. Because with the sleeveless Kieran Tierney so susceptible to injuries, Arteta may need Nuno on his best game, ready to go at a moment's notice. Much the same way as the previous 45 had begun, with Eddie Nketiah looking dull as ditch fucking water. Arsenal were lifeless, limp, and very ineffectual in this one, folks. It was Forest who would generate a decent half chance from a half volley off a cross. More play from Forrest as they look dangerous from a corner. But folks, in the 57th minute, the biggest chance for Arsenal of this game. As Bukayo Saka scissored and cut and played in a peach of a pass. Peach pass. To Eddie Nketiah. The English forward went with his head for a chance he is known for gobbling up. But bizarrely so, Nketiah was slammed right in the face, and it was an awkward and embarrassing header off target. It was the one big chance of the game for Arsenal, created by Bukayo Saka, and it came to utter shit.
Say, how do you know so much about Oops, I Crap My Pants?
I'm wearing them, and I just did.
Nice point, Grandma.
Thanks, Oops, I Crap My Pants.
Visit your local pharmacist and just say, Oops, I Crap My Pants, from Procter & Gamble.
Alexander Lacazette would come on for the young Charlie's got a golden ticket, Charlie Patino, in the 69th minute, the Pink Panther for the golden boy. 'Twas a solid outing from Patino, as on paper his numbers were bright, as he completed a high percentage of passes, and looked up for the moment despite having a deep impact on this match. Lacazette's contribution to this one, folks, however, would be minimal, as the Pink Panther would stumble and bumble around a bit, noticeably on one big occasion when Bukayo Saka, Mr. Chan's creator on the day, Little Chili Stir Fry, flipped in a ball that Alexander Lacazette would challenge for. Bizarrely so, Mr. Clouseau, the Pink Panther, let the ball run through his legs. It was an odd decision from Lacazette. I don't know if he was looking for a pen. I don't get why he did not try to strike on goal. Nonetheless, it came to nothing, and it was one of those small half chances on the day. It was all we could create.
I'm sure you gentlemen are famished from your travels. Hope you like Triscuits. Some pimento loaf.
And folks, in the 83rd, the inevitable struck. As Albert Sambilakonga's casual nature on the ball would cost Arsenal another goal and send them out of the FA Cup. Listen, Sambi is someone I rate and have big upped very much on this show when he has played. But I have also said that he needed minutes. He needed match fitness. Or games like this, moments like this were possible. It is not the first time. I recognize that. However, I believe Arteta should have built in minutes for the young man. This is casual scoop. Would go ball to arm on a Forest player, not a handball. And Forest would capitalize in transition with a goal from the scruffy fucking scruffalophagus, Lewis Graben. It was a mistake from Sambi, there is no doubt of this. And what must also be pointed out is the bizarre fucking nature of Cedric Soares on this play. As Cedric ran back with all of his Rick Moranis might, he took an odd, bizarre line in defending the cross. Rather than go in front of Graben to cut out the cross, to kill the danger, Cedric bizarrely gives up all sense of accountability and goes fucking behind Graben, What is he doing on this plane, man? Folks can blame Benny White all they want. Maybe Ben Blanco could have done better. But what is for sure is that Cedric Salrez looked like a fucking lost moron. What were you doing, Ricky Moranis? It was the goal that won the match. Sent Arsenal crashing out. Steve Cooper, the Welsh Tim Curry, would punch towards the ground in his black hooded sweatshirt.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
The second half came to its conclusion, and as always, there were three big pulsating second half takeaways. Number one. Eddie Nketiah was disconnected. He failed to impress on what was a huge day for him personally. With Mikel Arteta publicly stating he wants to keep the young English striker at Arsenal. And Eddie Nketiah himself claiming that his concerns relate to playing time. This was a massive opportunity, a chance to shine and help Arsenal into the next round. But rather than illuminate the city ground, Nketiah was dull, lifeless, and he spurned the biggest chance of the match for Arsenal. After what was a fantastic cross from Bukayo Saka. Number two. Mr. Albert Zombie Lokonga. He returned to the starting 11 for the first time in what has felt like an eternity. It was a 4-3-3 on the day. Wasami deployed as the lone six. The Belgian was a calming, reassuring force, connecting 93% of his passes, which for the most part was short or intermediate range of 5, 10, 15 yards. And in the absence of Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey, Lokonga was clearly tasked with getting Martin Odegaard on the ball. And he largely did a fine job of that. And I genuinely believe that Lokonga is off to a flying start in his Arsenal career. He looked like a leader today on the pitch if you watched him closely. However, if there is to be one criticism of this young lad, it is a big one, and that is this. He is too casual at times. Too fucking casual, Zombie. Cannot do that at this level, man. Against Forrest, Zombie's naivete bit him in the ass again. As it was that languid scoop that was intercepted and subsequently punished by Lewis Graben. Given Mikel Arteta played a similar role during his playing career, one must only imagine that Zombie Lokonga will be getting an earful from Spanish Michael. And finally, Arsenal's young guns have been eliminated from the FA Cup. And this is bitterly disappointing. There is no other way to spin it. It fucking sucks, man. The players will bathe and drenched in a comfortability we had hoped was wrung dry after the heroic 10-man performance against Man City. And folks, given all the talk of who our next captain should be, in a lot of ways, today showed us who the qualified candidates really are. Aaron Ramsdale, Gabriel Magalhães, and yes, folks, yes, Granit Xhaka. There was no urgency, there was no bite in the tackle, and in many ways, there was no leadership on display in the loss to Forest. And Tom, as you well know, we need a little push to all be smiling again.
Captain Jack will get you high tonight. Take you to your special island. Captain Jack will get you by tonight. Just a little push and you'll be smiling.
Now myself and Dave were wondering about a musical interlude to lift the doom and the gloom. How about this one?
Listen to love.
Just a reminder to look up our blogs at arsedevils.com and americanarsenology.medium.com, and please don't forget to subscribe to both the audio version and the occasional YouTube offerings.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, and welcome to the gun room. Jay's with me again, and we're actually dressed in black. We've just discovered we're dressed in black. We are the MIB. We're obviously in mourning for this FA Cup disaster, but we'll get to that. Don't worry about it. How are you, Jay?
Yeah, good, mate. Cheers. Not too bad.
Finished crying.
Yeah. I mean, what else can you do other than just laugh after what we saw on Sunday evening? Oh, my God. I mean, it was bad stuff. It was bad, wasn't it? You know,
as I said to you just before we came on, it was probably the worst one I can recall. It might be a case of it's like the nearest memory to me. We've seen some shockers, but that was there. The reaction on social media was quite intense. It was almost like the Man City performance was rubbed out, and there's been a lot of criticism, but we'll get to that. It wasn't the outcome we expected. It wasn't the outcome we wanted by any chalk against Forest. But when you looked at the lineup, did you kind of get a feeling? Did you feel a bit twingy and a bit nervy?
No. I thought when I first saw the starting 11, I thought we'd have more than enough to get a result. And I still think that. You know, I just think it's a reminder to everybody again just how weak this squad is. You know, you take a few players out, and I mean, it was so bad. But I think the players are a little bit better than that. They've showed us that they're better than that. You know, the players, you know, Lokonga, Tavares, you know, even Eddie, who was shocking on the day, they're better than that. It was just, they just didn't turn up, which I suppose is a mentality thing, maybe, which is slightly concerning. But before the game, not at all. I was happy Patino was starting. I mean, Forest aren't great, you know. They're a mid-table Championship side, so I still thought we'd have enough, but obviously it wasn't meant to be, or wasn't the case.
Arsenal just looked out of ideas, didn't they? As you say, I mean, I've been writing about it. I did a post-mortem on it for arsedevils.com, and there were 10 factors that came into play, and you've just hit one right on the head, that we got carried away. We were having some good results, but when those players went, you only had to look at that bench, how thin that bench was, and suddenly it dawned on you. That we were short. We've got a lot of average sort of backup players, but we were very, very short.
Yeah, I think the week before we played so well against City, and the positivity, even though we lost, there was the positivity was really apparent, and I suppose it maybe got to some of the players' head. Complacency may have been an issue. But saying that, I still firmly believe we should have won the game, even with that team out. You know, the squad, you know, highlighted by, you know, use Cedric as an example. You know, the step down from Tomiyasu is huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but still, he's still, you know, I'm not just picking on him. You know, Tavares from Tierney, you know, maybe not as drastic, but you would still expect a better performance than that. Even Rob Holding. Yeah, I tell you, the performance reminded me, because I went to the game, and the performance reminded me of the Burnley game at the start of the season. You know, possession, plenty of possession, but no ideas. Created nothing. It was very similar to that. I mean, do you want to go through this? I mean, the starting 11, I suppose. It was good to see Patino in there, like I said. And I thought, you know, you put Nketiah up there. He scored a few goals this season. You kind of expect a performance out of him. But
especially, you know, seeing as he's in the shop window as well. And
yeah.
Patrick Vieira's sniffing around like an old sort of hound dog.
Yeah.
But it didn't kind of materialise, did it? He looked well off the form. He looks lost.
And we still had, you know, we still had Martinelli on the left and Saka on the right. They're our starting sort of wide men. And we just never got going. The passing was poor. I'm sure we'll get onto the negatives of the game, but yeah, it was very disappointing. And nobody turned up. Nobody came out of the game with any credit. Maybe Leno, he made a couple of good saves, but the difference, even him, the difference between Leno and Ramsdale was so huge for me now. You know, you've seen all the aspects, really strong aspects of Ramsdale's game, you know, his distribution and his communication. Leno's a good shot stopper, but he's miles behind Ramsdale for me, and you could see it, you know. But yeah.
I'll tell you who played well for them. Tavares nearly got a goal, didn't he? That was a bit of a shocker. Let's not make any bones about it. We're talking about a miserable Arsenal performance. But Forest were bang on it, weren't they? They were feisty. They ran for everything. They fought for every ball. They really give us a battle. And I think they deserve some credit for that. I mean, we were just off the pace throughout. As you said, Tomiyasu and Gabriel, massive, massive loss. And the scales between Cedric and Holding are way off in terms of quality. But did he have any other choices? Devil's advocate and all that.
Yeah. I mean, just to, I thought Forrest, they competed really well, and they wanted it more, especially as the game went on, that you could tell they were quicker in the tackle. They wanted it more, which was concerning. But as far as their overall performance goes, I thought Forrest, all they really did was sort of, when they didn't have possession, they dropped into a back five, and then in front of the back five, there was a solid line of four. And they basically just said to Arsenal, try and break us down. If you're going to get the ball, if you're going to get the ball wide to Martinelli and Saka, then you've got to basically, they're going to double up on those. So you're going to have to do something special to get by. And we just couldn't do it. We had no creativity. We tried to get the ball out to those two. Martinelli basically was marked out of the game by the Forest fullback, who was really superb on the day. He's a cracking player. I think he's on loan from Middlesbrough. I can't remember his name now, but he was head and shoulders above anyone else on the pitch. And to be fair, Martinelli's in good form. So fair play to the Forest fullback, because Martinelli couldn't really do anything. Martinelli was looking to come in off the left-hand side. He was making that run that he does so well across the back four and looking to spin in behind. But we just didn't have the quality in midfield to pick him out or the vision. Our use of the ball was very poor. Saka, we were trying to find him, and again, same problem that Martinelli had. Nothing would go his way. I thought Nketiah, his movement was dreadful. But Forest overall, I don't think they had to do that much other than basically say, right, you're the Premier League team, come and break us down. And we couldn't do it. Rob Holding, Gabriel. The difference between Rob Holding and Gabriel is just massive, isn't it? You know, Gabriel's ability to, you know, his passing is much improved this season, and Rob Holding just hasn't got that in his locker.
It's the presence as well. Gabriel's got a presence about him, isn't he? He looks like a big old chap and sprawls out, makes himself big, makes himself look phenomenal, doesn't he? And Holding's just like, yeah, well, he's holding onto his hair, isn't he? That's what he's doing. He's making sure that doesn't come off.
Yeah. And I mean, if you put this performance together with his cameo against City, you know, Rob Holding, I'm talking about now, you know, it doesn't bode well, does it? I don't think he's not improved much, has he? I think we could do with an improvement there. You know, obviously we've got Saliba on loan, and you'd hope that next season Saliba will come in and sort of replace Holding as the first backup central defender. So.
Well, it's not all doom and gloom, because if Saliba comes back and we do get an injury to Tomiyasu, then Ben White can flick out there and Saliba can go in the middle. It's just that kind of right left-hand side. If Tierney gets injured, that we've got to worry about. We'll get to the glove throwing in a minute. But no Partey and Xhaka in the midfield. Mm-hmm. So if I was the manager of Forest, I would have been quite happy with that. because for me it looked a little bit light. You had, yeah. I think the biggest problem was Lokonga hadn't had a match for quite a while, and then we expected him to come in and look the part, and there he was with an even less experienced player. And that's a baptism of fire, that one, isn't it? Hey, throwing him in for that one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still, out of the summer signings, you know, Lokonga has shown me the least. You know, I think I wouldn't say the jury's out on him because he's such a young player, but he's been steady, hasn't he, without being outstanding this season from what we've seen of him. And I mean, again, it was another one of those performances that, yeah, he got plenty of the ball, Lokonga, but he didn't really do too much with it. They both look like, you know, Lokonga and Patino both look like players that they need a senior player alongside them, don't they? They need somebody who, because it, obviously to get to the level they're at, they know how to play the game. But, you know, if you've got even if Granit Xhaka would have played, you know, he would have basically marshaled Patino, told him where to go in certain situations, positional, where to be, just to get that extra yard ahead of the opponent. So it was a difficult game for Patino. Felt a bit sorry for him, you know, but a learning curve, which I'm sure, you know, he'll benefit from. I mean, what other options did we have, you know, in centre midfield? Maitland-Niles, he went to Roma before the game, you know. We don't have too many options in there, do we?
Well, on social media, quite a few people were slagging Arteta off, and it's the player that wanted to go. I mean, you know, we wanted to hold on to him and we still didn't play him. So what's the player supposed to do? He wanted to go and play football. That's what he wants to do. And he's not really that bothered about the money at the minute, which makes a change for a footballer. So as I said, let him go. Arteta did the decent thing, I think, and let him go. They've got no option to buy, so he could still come back. And come back a better player.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough one because, I mean, you don't have to look too far, do you, to see that, like you just said, the player wanted to leave. I think it was an agreement that they had, you know, if Maitland-Niles hadn't been able to force his way into the side. So I think it was agreed a long time ago, wasn't it, that January transfer window comes around, a serious bid comes in or a loan offer, then he was going to go. So I suppose... you got to take your hat off to Arteta, really, for treating him with the respect that, you know, respecting the agreement that they probably had a good couple of months ago. So fair play, but it did leave us short.
I'm just going to approach that because saying that we're short and people are kind of getting on Arteta's back about that. And I'm not trying to defend him in any particular way because I don't think I have to. But, you know, we are short on players, but we spent a lot of money in the summer. We knew it couldn't all be done in one transfer window. And to be honest, what we did get for our money was excellent. So we knew that it was going to be two or three transfer windows, didn't we, until we cleared out all the dross, which we still got some of, and rebuild the back line, if you like, the sort of follow-up. If you look at Liverpool and Man City, they've got quality to come off the bench.
Yeah,
but when you look at Arsenal's bench, it's a bit, he's good. Or, you know, it's that kind of reaction to the bench. So I think it's just about kind of balancing the argument. And it's getting lost on social media. It's like, you know, they should have used the subs earlier. For me, Lacazette, I don't know about you, but Lacazette should have come on earlier, I think. But the other options.
We don't, no, they weren't. It was the bench was filled with young players, wasn't it? And Kolasinac, who came on at the end. So it's paper thin.
What was that about? Fill me in. We're down and then he puts a defender on. What's that about? Arteta?
You see a few people, don't you, saying that it was more like a symbolic substitution to show those that make the decisions that we've got, you know. Such as
what was that? Symbolics?
To sort of show that we've got such a weak squad. You know, I mean, Kolasinac, he needs to go, doesn't he? Cedric. There's a few of those players. You know, Leno, he's not really... He did all right, but, you know, he knows he's not going to be there long term. Cedric, Kolasinac, even Holding, you know, Nketiah. these are players that have no future at the club. You know, there's no, I mean, there was no play. The Klasnac shouldn't have even got to, you know, got on the bench. I've never really understood the Nketiah inclusion. You know, even going back a good few games where it was made public that he hadn't signed a new contract or refused to sign a new contract because he wants to go and play somewhere else. Then Arteta starts to play him. I've found that decision baffling, you know, because you've got somebody who, okay, he's not come out and said those words that he doesn't want to play for the club anymore, but his actions obviously speak louder than those words. And then he finds himself involved in the first team. And out of, you know, he's grew up in that, that group of players. He comes from that group of the Bukayo Sakas and the Smith Rowe, you know, and he's come from that group from Hayland. And whereas, you know, Saka, Bukayo Saka, Smith Rowe, Martinelli, you know, those players can have bad games, like Saka and Martinelli against Forest. They didn't play very well. However, they're young enough and they've also showed us that they are the real deal, right? You know, they will have these bad games because they're young. And it's, you can put Smith Rowe in this as well. Martinelli, Smith Rowe, Saka, they will have bad games from time to time. But in general, they've showed us that they do have the ability. They're exciting, exciting prospects that you're going to give them. You're going to let them off for a bad performance, aren't you? In it, with Nketiah, I've never seen that. I've never seen consistently, or even I've never even seen it once. I've never seen Nketiah hit the highs that Bukayo Saka has, or Martinelli has, or Smith Rowe has, and I just don't see what Arteta sees in him. I know he says he wants him to play, he wants him to stay rather, so that's why he's playing. But I've never seen it with Nketiah, and it just his inclusion. I mean, I don't mean to bash him because I don't like, you know, we don't do that on here. We don't attack players, but I think you've got to be honest. He's 22 years old now, and I can't think of a time when he's ever hit the heights of Smith Rowe or Martinelli or Saka. And when at the moment, I know we're painfully thin up front, but I would have started Lacazette. I'd play Lacazette. I'd start Lacazette every game at the moment because the alternatives are next to nothing. You may as well play with no striker.
Well, I can only assume that we've got someone coming through. We've got someone in our sights, so we're going to splash out. But whether that's true or not, let's move on to the crux of it. Let's rub our hands a little bit, get them warm. 34 minutes on the clock. A really displeased Arteta. I mean, he looked really grumpy, didn't he, on the sidelines? And he hooked Tavares. Mm-hmm. And we got possibly the most interesting part of the match, the most exciting, the angry glove. Yeah. I mean, that was something, wasn't it? It came off very theatrical, almost mm-hmm. like a Frenchman, the way he kind of backhanded tossed it. I would have just slung it at someone. Was he right? Was Arteta right to hook him off in that way? Because it's a really embarrassing thing for any player. But we'll let you pick it up. But I think there was reason in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was having this conversation yesterday with our very own Isaiah, and he was basically saying that it was harsh on Tavares. You know, he's a young player. He's going to be needed, especially with Tierney's injury record. He's going to be called upon and what have you. And he posted some stats to back up the point of that he didn't actually have that bad a half. Which, you know, I do believe that stats only say so much, right? You know, I was behind that goal, and I thought Tavares really struggled. I thought his passing was very poor. Positionally, he was very poor. They were targeting him. And again, Forest weren't great, and they aren't a great football team, and they were just exposing that side of the pitch. Now, he had Martinelli in front of him, who we're both huge fans of Martinelli, but I suppose the defensive side of his game isn't his strong point. So he's not going to get much help from Martinelli. You had Rob Holding on the left-hand side, and you had Charlie Patino on the left-hand side in the central midfield. It was a weak part of the pitch. Now, as you said, Arteta was going crazy. You know, it was very noticeable just how frustrated he was. And with Tavares being on that side of the pitch to where he was stood, I think there was an element of Tavares being slightly unlucky that he was on that side, because Arteta, you know, he was fuming at the general performance, because it was a, I mean, 90 minutes was shocking, but that first half an hour, we were really bad. We couldn't make a pass. I think, you know, another thing that sort of works against Tavares, you know, because of his size and the way he runs, I think mistakes look worse, if that makes sense. You know, he's not the tidiest of players. So when he makes a mistake, it looks worse. And I think he didn't play very well. And I thought Arteta was right to take him off. We've cried out for a long time for a manager that has a certain ruthless side, right? Where if something's going wrong, we need to change it. You know, Wenger never used to do it, really, did he? And I've got no problem with Arteta changing something. I think throwing down the gloves, nothing. It's just frustration. I think Tavares has done well this season in parts, but he's also done not so well. And I think he's still learning. And I think he's at a huge football club. And I think he just needs to take the rough with the smooth, you know, not overreact. He's still a part of the first team squad. And I've got, like I said, I've got no problem. I thought Arteta was right and he did the right thing.
Well, I think this is slightly tongue-in-cheek, but I did read on, I think it was on Facecrack, I read that Arteta had kept his gloves and Tavares wasn't going to play for them anymore because of it. Must be very attached to those gloves, but I wouldn't have thought so, the way he got rid of one. Do you think it's going to cause a problem at all, or it's just one of those things where the manager does what he has to do and the player just accepts it for what it is? As you say, Tavares has had a really good season. Apart from two games that I can remember, we've been very enthusiastic about his performances other than those. But when he's off the boil, he's off the boil. But do you think there's going to be a problem?
I don't think so. You know, it wasn't that long ago Arteta was a player. So you live in hope that he's still got, he will have that ability to deal with the situation in isolation and just see that, you know, that there isn't a problem. I think ultimately, if there was an attitude problem with Tavares, it would have been picked up by now. You know, I mean, how many players have we seen go out the door? You know, your Guendouzis, your Mesut Ozil, your Aubameyang recently, where Arteta just doesn't accept a bad attitude, or he doesn't accept even the slightest sort of disagreement with the way he wants his team to be and the way he wants his team to think. So I think Arteta would have picked up on that. I just think it's just a, you know, ultimately anyone would be frustrated at being, like you said, there'll be a hint of embarrassment. Nobody wants to be pulled off after that. And he will, I'm sure at the end of the game, Arteta, when they're in the changing rooms, had a quiet word with him, and that was it, you know. And he Tavares will also know that he's in his position. You know, Tierney's the senior man on that left-hand side, but Tierney can't make 25, 30 games a season, can he? He knows he's going to get plenty of game time. He just had a shocker, and unfortunately, it looked bad. You know, a lot of people that were around me in the stand in that away end were, it was very noticeable just how crazy Arteta was going, but also just how badly Tavares was struggling. So no, I don't think it'd be a big thing.
I've never quite seen him like that before. He's so animated and so angry and furious. Everything he kind of did looked angry. Blinking looked angry.
So annoying.
There was a possible penalty shout for Ben White, but I didn't think much of it. A bit shirt pulling, pulled him to the floor. Penalty or not?
Well, I suppose if VAR was there, like it should have been in every FA Cup tie, I suppose it was probably... I mean, you'd have to say yes, because if they've been given, but years gone by, it'd be no. But if, you know, I think if there was VAR there and the VAR was being fair and consistent, which it isn't, but it, you know, if it was being consistent, then I suppose that's a penalty because he pulls him back. But
Let's pick up on that, because I really want to, in the top of the show, I said about us tearing the FA and EFL a new one, because I don't really understand it. You know, they won't have VAR at a non-Premier League match. This is the oldest competition in the world.
Yeah.
Why devalue it by not putting all your support behind it and trying to make a good name for VAR, which Christ knows it hasn't got at the minute? I just don't get it. Do you?
No. Saturday morning, I had the radio on, and I think it was Saturday morning, Sunday morning, maybe. I can't remember who Liverpool were playing in the FA Cup, but they had the chairman on. I think it was Shrewsbury. They had the chairman on, basically talking about the VAR, and it costs. The chairman said it cost them £9,000 to pay for the VAR for that game. So Liverpool and Shrewsbury would cover it, basically split it down the middle. So I can imagine that, you know, £9,000 to Liverpool is absolutely nothing, but the farther you go down the league, you know, clubs like Boreham Wood or whatever, you know, it's going to be expensive. But to not have it in every ground, it's just, I mean, how is that even fair? You know, how can one ground... I know both teams are fully aware that there's no VAR, but it just doesn't make sense. Like you said, it devalues the competition. It also, you know, it just looks messy, doesn't it? You know, you expect the FA to just be better than that. And I mean, I suppose they make they drop a clanger all over the shop. But I don't know. It's just such a Shearer was right after the game last night. You know, how can it not be in every ground? You know.
Well, we are also going to discuss Liverpool as well, because they're in the middle of a bit of a shitstorm at the moment regarding that postponement. There was a COVID outbreak. Turns out it wasn't as bad as first portrayed. And it was one player, in fact. The positives turned out to be negatives. And then it was suggested that a group of Premier League clubs wanted the EFL to launch an inquiry. And the EFL said no. I mean, this is where we're at with the game at the moment, aren't we? It seems like the cart is leading the horse.
I mean, did you see the interview from Klopp, you know, after explaining the situation? I mean, the guy is, I'm sure he was smirking, you know, as he was talking, and he was just stumbling his way through the interview, because he knows what he's saying is absolute bollocks, right? It's just rubbish what he was coming out with, saying that they had multiple false positives. And I've read somewhere that, you know, the chances of that, you got more chance of winning the lottery than the amount of false positives that they had. It's just a joke. You can see why you get quite a few people, which is sort of, they're getting the interest in the game is just waning, you know, because VAR, this kind of crap from Klopp and Liverpool pulling out and then being proved there's nothing, you know, no issue, no, it's just so frustrating. And there's a lot about the game, a lot of aspects about the game that it's just not very likable, isn't there? You know, from that point of view, you know, the referees, PG, MOL and Premier League, FA, it's just, I don't know, so frustrating.
What was it when Liverpool were committed elsewhere, weren't they? Some sort of world club championship, weren't they? And they had to field an under-23 side. So what's the difference with that? And, you know, putting out a team for an FA, you know, that's not the be-all and end-all for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool, is it? It just smells.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. That's exactly how it is. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And certain clubs get these decisions. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, media darlings or, you know, certain clubs, your Liverpools, your Manchester Uniteds, your Man Cities, they get the rub of the green. And there is bias and there is these decisions, and they don't even themselves out, do they? That's just a false assumption that these decisions get evened out. And I mean, I can't stand bloody Liverpool, even though we'll probably go there on Thursday and get absolutely battered. But I suppose it's the principle, isn't it, of being able to just take advantage of the situation and, you know, close a training ground for one day and claim there's there's X amount of COVID cases. A couple of days later, field a very strong team and claim there was only one.
I'll tell you what, Jesus must be a scouser, mustn't he? He's gone down there and he's blessed them all and made them all better. He's a scouser. Jesus.
Well, this, I want the scouse variant of COVID because you have it one day, you don't have it the next. Perfect.
I tell you, when I took my test, I got a negative, but it clearly was a faulty test because we had a few and we tested them. And then when the missus went to work, she was positive. So I've had the negative sort of false reading, but never a positive false reading.
No.
So that's really weird. He's talking through those very veneered, shiny teeth.
Nobody has seen that interview from Klopp from yesterday, go and watch it. He's a clown. I can't stand the bloke. Absolute clown.
Well, I had a lot of time for him, to be honest, and till he came up with this hogwash, and he's kind of just left a dirty taste, really. Dirty, dirty Klopp. It's been a really bad year, hasn't it? All season so far. Bad referee decisions. We can't seem to get a hang of this VAR. You've got the PGMOL. They're all confused. They don't know what they're doing. Standard of refereeing is through the floor. It's in the sewer, isn't it? It's just a rotten season after we've had all lockdown. We've had no crowds. We're just getting the flavour back now for a bit of live football. And then you've got all this bollocks.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it end?
No, I know. And I mean, did you see the Man United Villa game last night? Villa scored what looked like a perfectly good goal, and then it took them 3.5 minutes to basically send the on-field referee the message to say come and review it, and they were just looking for anything to just basically disallow the goal, and it's just a mess. I mean, at no point should the game stop for 3.5 minutes, because I mean, Steven Gerrard came out and said, you know, that killed the team's momentum, and he's absolutely spot on, because Villa were destroying Man United and they were all over them, creating chance after chance. Not that I certainly don't like Aston Villa or Gerrard for that matter, but I did agree with him when he said that it killed the team's momentum, because after that, Man United grew into the game a bit more. And 3.5 minutes is a long time, isn't it? I know you get that time back at the end, but it's not the same, because it comes at a pivotal moment of the half where a goal has been scored and emotions are raised and then obviously cut in half. So, yeah, this is what I was alluding to earlier. It's just another aspect of the game that, I mean, VAR has not made anything better, has it? Okay, it might get the odd decision correct, but I mean, so many people now are going to non-league games and lower level games where they don't have VAR just to keep, like, you know, get that honest emotion of a goal going in, you know, and not worry about it being called back, you know. And I mean, I'd get rid of VAR. I'd keep the goal line technology, you know, by all means keep that. But if it was up to me, I would scrap the whole thing, get rid of it.
So we've got Liverpool coming up again. We think we've got Liverpool coming up. They might sort of drop down with something or another in between. What's your feelings about a result? What do you think?
Well, I think if we, if we lose by 2 goals, I think the tie is going to be over. I've got to be honest. I think if we go there and get a goal, and I don't know, it's so tough, because that Forest game again, as a supporter, it kind of takes you back a couple of steps, doesn't it? I mean, Liverpool are a good side. They're missing some key players, but so are we, I suppose. So, honestly, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? How do you think it's going to go?
I've got none. If we can just sneak a goal, I'll be happy with that. But, we're going to have the same problems going into this one as Forest. We've got to try and pick the boys up, dust them off and get them going again and try and find some way of getting through there. We're weak up the front. We're floppy in the middle. And Christ knows, if we don't get Tomiyasu and Gabriel back, which it looks like it could be a bit doubtful, we're going to be in trouble, massive trouble. And they're still going to have enough, because as we were talking about earlier, we've got a bench that is low quality, sort of mixed, isn't it, really? And they can just bring on like for like all the time. Doesn't matter that Salah's gone off, really. They've got players of equal quality just to come through. Even the younger players, they're at such a pitch now that they can come on. They're more advanced with their academy players than we are.
I mean, with Spurs at the weekend, would you risk Tomiyasu?
Yeah.
For Liverpool, would you risk it? I mean, I personally would just stick with either Chambers or Cedric at right back against Liverpool and just keep Tomiyasu for the Spurs game, because for me, that's the bigger game, get a result there and we're in a great position. But I think we'll go strong against Liverpool.
Oh, what was that? Was your microwave gone off?
That's an email. I do apologise. So where was it? Yeah, so I think we'll go strong.
It's all right, while we've been on, one of my lights has fallen over, so I probably look a bit shadowed at the moment. So, yeah, it's all going on here. It's all, that's what we do, isn't it? Right, to finish off with, sir, I've got this. It's the, you probably can't see it there, it's back to front, isn't it? It's the Premier League Team of the Year nominees. 24 players, yeah?
Right.
In there, you've got your Harry Kane, your Lukaku, Foden, Grealish. Not one Arsenal player.
Really?
Not a one.
Wow. I thought Ramsdale might get in there.
Yeah, me too. Saka?
I mean, I did. Yeah, I thought ESR as well has had a great season. I mean, going back to Ramsdale, can you think of another goalkeeper that's had a better season than him?
No.
I can't. Not really. You know, Edison, I suppose, but he plays in a great side, but... No.
That, well, you know what the galling thing is? Ramsdale's not there, but Martinez is.
Is Harry Kane there?
Of course.
Oh,
England captain, isn't he? Yeah, he's there.
He scored, what, 5 goals this season?
Doesn't seem to matter, does it?
Yeah, no.
Well, I thought I'd put that to you. You can look it up online. Anyone who's wants to have a look can just look it up at the Premier League. And it's you're voting now for FIFA 22.
Tomiyasu should be there, shouldn't he? Tomiyasu's had a fine season, a really good season. He should be there.
Who knows how these things work, Jay? I think it's just two dusty old boys in a back room sort of going through an upgraded version of Shoot. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
Are you old enough?
Oh, I am, yeah.
Those were the days, mate. We will see you when you're back on the pod next, because it's coming thick and fast, isn't it? So we'll upgrade everyone on your position. What are you doing? Are you coming on for the Liverpool one or Spuds?
We can do whatever you want. I'm available. So
yeah, it's just really tight, isn't it? At the minute, they're just coming up. I don't know why I was doing that. I was sort of rubbing my chest and
thick and fast. It's whichever way you look at it now, we've lost 2 games in a row. So in a week, you know, we played Liverpool twice and that lot. So, by the time we do the next one, so if it's this time next week, it could be, we could be in a bad position, you know what I mean? Very quickly, or in a good position. It's so, I know that's a very obvious thing to say, but this season has been, it's almost been like that, hasn't it? Where there's been no middle ground. It's been awful down in the dumps to really high. And there hasn't been that sort of that mid level. So I think we're still in that sort of phase, aren't we, really?
Now, before we go, do you remember me saying that when we beat Tottenham under Emery, we all got a bit carried away and there was a big drop.
Yeah.
This is our big drop after that City game, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, I hope not. I hope that when the players come back, you know, they can sort of rejuvenate the team.
Yeah, I'm not too down about it. You know, it's as we've always said on the podcast, they're a young side. They lack experience. This is all their experience bank, isn't it? You know, they can look back on the time where the side wasn't as developed as it was. And we've got to bear in mind, this is still the project going on, or the process, if you like to call it the process. A bit sick of that. But, you know, anyone with a pair of eyes who's watched football or played football will have to be objective about it and say, look, Rome wasn't built in a day. We're only starting out. and we lost the first three games with not even the majority of that side together.
Yeah, and we have improved, and we just need to. It's just, I think, as like we've said a few times, as a supporter, Forest was very, very poor in the same way as Everton was very, very poor, but we reacted, didn't we? When, you know, we went on a good run after Everton, and let's, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully we can get a result against Liverpool. But the Spurs game for me is just like huge. If we can get a result there, you know, what will that do? But again, like you just said, as this season goes on, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, there's going to be really poor performances, because it's a new team, it's a young team. And you never know, we could end up signing one or two players in the next couple of weeks. And I mean, what kind of boost, you know, if we get one or two really good, effective players, what would that do to this squad? You know, really, it would give us that extra push. So like you just did, fingers crossed. Come on, Edu, pull it out of the bag.
Let's hope so. Jay, thanks a lot. Been brilliant as always. And we'll see you on the next one. Come on, the Arsenal.
Bye-bye.
Now, if you tuned in for the last pod, you will have heard Dave's ridiculous question. He comes up with them frequently. And here's the latest. In the event of an imminent apocalypse with only 5 minutes to live, would you, from the following, cancel your dentist appointment? Go straight to the end of the book you were reading to find out what happened? Or would you put the cat or the dog out just in case you survived and it started eating you whilst you were in a coma? Dave, are you ill? Could I add one? He's nodding. I'd go massively overdrawn by ordering 200 pairs of something nonsensical like meat shredder claws. They seriously exist. They exist in the virtual shopping empire of Amazon. You put them on your palms and you shred up your meat. It's like having Wolverine around your house on a social. They cost $38.04. They've got a rating of 4.5 stars and there's been 131 reasonably impressive content reviews. But then if you're not killed by the apocalypse, you've got a lot of returns and bank charges. Consider your options is our advice, but do it quickly. Right, we're all done here. My thanks to Dave, Isaiah and Jay. Check out Isaiah's blogs at americanarsenology.medium.com or look him up on Twitter. You can find Dave on Twitter as SilentDave101 and Jay as The Bald Gooner. Shout outs to SoMD, Brandon Murphy. Check out the YouTube version of the show and please like, follow or subscribe. Look up our blogs at AskDevils.com or look us up on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for taking the time to join us. We'll see you next time. Stay safe and well and remember, North London is red.
Not my concern. I'm very superficial. I hate everything official. You've made a desperate appeal, now save your breath. Attachment to obligation, that's so wet. And your sex life complications are not my fascination.
I'm in love.